Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 187. So today I'm really excited to be joined by Corak Ray. He is an associate professor at the Mays Business School of Texas University and also director of the Mays Innovation Research Center. He earned a PhD in economics from Stanford University, and this guy really specializes in the future of work and very specifically outsourcing. So I'm thrilled to have Corak join us in this podcast. Corak is actually kind enough to let us host one of his latest essays on our website. That essay is called Online Outsourcing and the Future of Work. So we will have this essay in the show notes, and also it will be within our white paper section of our website. So I really encourage you to check out this essay. It has a huge amount of insight and a lot of thoughts into the future of work and the role that outsourcing plays in that. So I really enjoyed my conversation with Corak. This did go over. It's about a 45-minute conversation, so actually I'm breaking this into two parts just to stay true to our shorter format podcast kind of scene. So I hope you enjoy. This is part one. In part one, we chat to Corak about his personal journey and his introduction. So I'm sure you'll enjoy this. And of course, we touch on outsourcing considerably. So enjoy this. If you want any of the show notes, or if you want to get in touch with Corak, then of course, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/187. So hi and welcome back, everybody. Today I'm really excited to be joined by Corak Ray. I've got a little introduction here for Corak because he has such a stellar CV. Corak is an associate professor at the Mays Business School of Texas A&M University and director of the Mays Innovation Research Center. Corak earned a PhD in economics from Stanford University. He has taught at the University of Chicago and Georgetown University, as well as Texas A&M University. He also served on the Council of Economic Advisors of the White House from 2007 to 2009 during the historic financial crisis. So significantly, why I'm having a chat to Corak today is because he is a labor economist who researches specifically the future of work and is doing a lot of work also within the outsourcing sector as, I suppose, a derivative or a catalyst of that. So thank you so much, Corak, for joining us. And how are you today?
Great, Derek. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolute pleasure, absolute pleasure. And I can never obviously introduce yourself as well as you could. Do you want? Is there anything you can add to that, or have I done an okay job?
No, that was great.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, Corak, I first bumped into you online for an article that you wrote, a fantastic article that really caught my eye on the FEE website, Foundation for Economic Education, called The Future of Outsourcing, the Largest Economic Transformation Ever. So it is a big title, and really it is a very big subject, and one that I'm passionate about. So I suppose, as a sort of origin story, as a genesis, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came first into the kind of economic and academic arena, but then how you developed your interest in outsourcing?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to talk about that. So I, as you said, am a labor economist. I earned my undergraduate in math and economics at University of Chicago, and then I went to Stanford for my PhD in economics, and then I taught at Chicago, and I went back to the University of Chicago to teach as a professor. And all this time, my area was primarily as a labor economist who studies labor markets and compensation. And of course, like everyone else, I was part of the growth of the internet and the expansion of digital technology around the world. Really, what happened is I worked in the White House under George Bush in 2007 to 2009, which itself was an amazing experience. But what I noticed during that time is, when you work for the president, you realize that the president of the United States doesn't actually do that much. He sort of is constantly outsourcing tasks to a 5,000-person staff around the White House. I mean, he has a handful of advisors, and then those people themselves have advisors, and there's an enormous staff around it. And I noticed that this was an extremely efficient way of accomplishing tasks because it removed the burden, it shifted the burden towards other people who could then identify who the best person in the staff was to do the job, and often that person was better than the president himself. And so when I left the White House, I was teaching at Georgetown, and I wanted to expand my productivity, and I really wanted to leverage my time. And I was based off of this simple analogy. I was from the president. I said, how could I, as an individual, have kind of like a presidential staff, helping with my work, increasing my productivity, trying to make me more superhuman. And that's when I discovered Odesk, which was the first one of these early online platforms. And I hired some online workers and through Odesk, and I was having them mostly work on various research-related tasks to my academic research. There's a lot of work that goes into publication of an academic paper, and the reality is that I didn't need my PhD to do every single part of that job. In fact, a lot of it would be better served by people who could specialize in certain areas. Like, there are people on Odesk who would type out mathematical equations as their full-time job, and they were quicker and faster and more precise than I was at doing that. So it didn't make sense for me to keep typing those equations out. Instead, it made sense to hire someone on Odesk to do it. So this was largely based on the theory of comparative advantage, which we teach in economics. And really, it is that people should people not just people, but actually countries also should really specialize in their highest and best use of their time and resources. And what I noticed was that there was still a lot of friction in terms of working with online workers through Odesk. And so what happened from after several years of doing that is I hired many of I employed many students in my research program to then oversee some of these online workers. And eventually we built an auction website that is which is a platform for distributing tasks to online workers in an efficient way, which we both use regularly, and also we conduct research with the mechanics of the auction itself. And then in the last few years, what I've done is I've made this area of outsourcing, especially digital-based outsourcing, one of my primary areas of research interests. And that's what I study, and that's what our center is organized around. And we really try to understand what are the massive economic benefits that can accrue from online outsourcing.
Right. And so as you've developed through your sort of economic journey, I suppose you're now concentrating more on outsourcing. And is that because you see it as such a major change in society? You really do see it as, one of the most transformative catalysts for how we live and work today?
I do, actually. I think it is the undiscovered country of the future, and it is the major transformation that people don't yet know about. If you just look at the basic economics, I mean, the reality is that the internet is now penetrating the other half of the world's population, and there are going to be billions of people coming online for the first time in the next decade or two. And a lot of these people are not they're not coming online as consumers, partly because the internet has largely already penetrated the developed countries, and they're now reaching to the developing countries. And the reality is that, we're moving into low-income parts of the world where these people coming online will not really be consumers in the way consuming the kind of the products that Google and Facebook are selling, but rather they're going to be producers and they're going to be people who supply their labor to the market. And what the real benefit of this is that it will effective outsourcing will unlock huge amounts of productivity by matching together workers on the one side and employers on the other in ways that I think the world has never yet seen.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because outsourcing, we talk about it as a new sort of technologically enhanced thing, and there's a lot of friction about it coming in. But it's really as old as society itself, in a way, isn't it? Because outsourcing effectively is the essence of role specialization. So back in the old days, in villages, when people went out hunting, society started to develop when they said some people stay at home and man the fire and make the tools and we'll go out hunting, which allows for sort of role specialization. It allows for people to become better at what they do, which allows for kind of a granularization of roles within society and then an enhancement of society. And we see that very commonly in business. Most businesses outsource their accounting, most businesses outsource many functions. But then it seems that as soon as the evolution of that, which is sort of the internet enhanced cross-border service outsourcing, then suddenly there's kind of friction because people are concerned about the economic implications of that, the nationalistic and the sort of cross-border implications. Do you see that the kind of waters have been muddied slightly because of the way I see it, it's almost just a linear progression, but it's kind of muddied because of the sort of the domestic economic interests of each acting country.
Yeah, you're right. I think you made two points. Yeah, and you're right that outsourcing has always been around. I think what's new this time is that the internet is making it more available, faster, and more transparent. And it's getting rid of the intermediaries, which before you would have to have a large corporation to and many middlemen in between the steps. And now we can lead to almost direct contracting between the employer and the worker. You're right. It's a linear transformation. I think this is now accelerated by the disintermediation of the internet. Your second point is also true. I do think there's a little bit of a wave of nationalism that's spreading across both the U.S. and collaterally across other countries. And I think outsourcing you can think of as a form of trade, and especially free trade, where one person is trading their service for income. And for that to really work in the best sense, you really want to allow free trade and not to put up barriers to trade that nationalism inherently does. So there is an inherent conflict there. But I'm actually optimistic that the profit motive will drive enough businesses and employers to continually search for value, and that will drive the push towards outsourcing, even if it is politically unpopular at times.
Yeah, there's profit-driven development, but also efficiency, isn't there? And it's very commonly said, like businesses and societies are forced towards a more efficient outcome, effectively, aren't they? There's no
That's right.
real option in that regard. So, in terms of that, you mentioned the political environment, and you were in the White House with Bush, and now we have Trump, obviously quite outspoken with outsourcing, and but. As you've said in your papers, like outsourcing, well, there's many sort of stages of outsourcing, but one of the sort of bigger aspects was manufacturing, so physical product outsourcing in the 60s. And now that's easier to control. You can control the migration of physical products across the borders, of course, and also with human migration, you can, of course, control that over the borders. But now, with the internet, as you say, the disintermediation of all of this, the sort of burgeoning potential workforce, which is potentially kind of 7 billion people in a few years, can any of this actually be policed? Can it be if someone sends you an email with let's say, $10,000 of productivity contained with that email, is it possible to monitor this, to control it, to regulate it?
I hope not. And I don't think it is I think it is very difficult to police this and really unnecessary. You know, really that we shouldn't try, I think, to be protectionist. And I think that would end up with causing a lot of economic harm, because even trying to figure out the location of work and when it's done and why it's done, it's very hard to actually narrow that down precisely. And so I think it's hopeless to even try. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's you know, the simple example of, like, even if you look at a pencil for that anyone uses has, you know, parts of it that are made around the world, from the graphite in the center to the wood casing to the metal ring. And digital work eventually will have that same feature, where all the work that you see, like when you put together a PowerPoint slide deck, could be sourced from multiple countries. And trying to locate the source of that work is not really productive. Rather than, I think that would be a mistake to try to set up some regulatory regime around that.
Mm-hmm. And then, so where do you see the continued evolution? Is it obviously, and as well, I suppose this ties into the proliferation of internet across the world, which you have, of course, written about. But then also there's the essence of automation and AI and things like that. You talk about reduction of friction. You talk about sort of more efficient markets creating less friction, which means that there's more disintermediation, which means that there's more sort of one-to-one trade, which fundamentally is positive. But where does all this go when potentially there will be a sort of equilibrium shift as sort of wealth and populations are potentially more evenly spread?
Yeah, I mean, there are some harsh truths to face, and I'm as an academic, I'm happy to address them and try to face them. You know, always with trade, there are always winners and there are always losers. On net, the net gain is positive, but you have to be aware that some people will win and others will lose. And outsourcing is no different. I think, you know, overall productivity will grow and overall economic surplus will rise, but what will happen is that industries that are somewhat protected from that, like an example would be transcription in the United States, will be exposed to global competition. And those typists in the U.S. who make 10 times the amount of pay as a similar typist in Manila or Hong Kong will be out of a job. That, to me, is while it may seem unfortunate, maybe even sad for the American, the reality is that it's globally efficient, and that that person should reallocate and retrain themselves into other kinds of jobs that have higher value in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think there's going to be, I mean, this is going a long way down the spectrum, but do you then think that there is going to be infinite requirement for production? Because, you know, I think it was Adam Smith back, you know, a long, long time ago, that suggested that as efficiency rises in, you know, only a couple of decades, people will only need to work 10 hours a week, but still kind of 100 years later, we're still working, you know, 60, 70 hours a week. But now there is a conversation starting, isn't there, that people might not have to work. Will there be a living allowance? And also through automation, will even any requirement for a lot of these more basic roles be required? So where do you see that journey?
So you know, I have been following this debate on the living wage and like the universal basic income. I'm not a fan of, you know, that concept. I think we've got plenty of evidence that providing that kind of social insurance kills incentives to work and save, and it could do a lot of damage to society. I also don't believe that people will really want to completely be unproductive. I mean, what you know, if you look at the data of what's already happened and kind of economics of what how people behave and how markets work is once people's productivity grows, they have, it's true that this is what we teach in microeconomics. There's both an income and a substitution effect in the sense that it's true that they want to, they have more income and so they've met their basic needs and therefore they're maybe more likely to work less and to take more leisure time. But at the same time, for every hour of product of output, they're earning that much more, and therefore their productivity goes up, and so it's they're more efficient at working, and so that's going to lead them to work more. Mm. I don't think there's a problem at all, but with creating a new generation of entrepreneurs or new generation of superhuman productivity through outsourcing, and that will just increase growth and happiness and human welfare.
Yeah, ultimately we'll just develop more quicker as opposed to just doing the same with less time
right.
input. Yeah,
that's right.
Because, the whole thing puts into question then why would you educate your youth and why would you kind of do anything if actually you don't need to work and there's that.
That's right.
There's a sort of loss of purpose. It could be a very dangerous social experiment, really, couldn't it? It could actually put a country back by kind of a huge amount if they do something for 5 years where it...
Well, another way of thinking of this is think about farming technology 150 years ago or 100 years ago. When the tractor first came on the scene, there was a risk that all these manual farmers would have nothing to do. There would be massive unemployment. What would we do with them? And the reality is that what happened as a society is our farming sector shrunk so that the labor portion of farming became very small, the capital portion became much larger, and then people who would have become farmers in the last generation decided to do other things, like enter new industries that now emerged, that now because of this new pool of people that were able to work, like financial services. And so I think the same thing is going to happen now with both automation, with technology-enabled change, as well as through outsourcing.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because I think maybe bastardizing those statistics, but with farming, before there was technology, it took maybe, 30, 40% of the population to actually generate the food required for the population, whereas now it's something like 1% of the population. And,
exactly right.
As with specialization, it then lets the other 99% go and be nuclear physicists and kind of all other specialties. Yeah. So
that's right.
It's a sort of progressive development, isn't it? So
that's exactly right.
Interesting. And then your personal experience then in outsourcing, you mentioned the president effectively outsourced everything. And, I have been involved in outsourcing, very much so since about 2011. I would argue that the playing devil's advocate, that the president, the establishment is far older than the president himself. And I would assume that the establishment has had many decades, if not centuries, to become efficient, to learn how to run the show. And then the new president pops in and almost fits into the machine. How did you find your personal journey with outsourcing, with trying to create this machine around you so that it kind of optimize your daily activities?
Well, it took a lot of time and a lot of retraining of myself. That was a big investment, and I think that's a non-trivial leap. If you think about the way technology has developed today, it's really designed around individuals and individuals doing things themselves by themselves. Mm. So in the past, we had maybe a travel agent. Now we have to book our own flights and search for them ourselves and do our own travel planning. And even though that maybe it has saved us time overall, it actually has increased the burden on individuals to do all this. Mm. And so what I had to do was to build a system such that I was primarily giving instructions to other people and then letting them handle all the details based on their own special skill sets. And that's not something that technology enables us to do. And so now we, Google is made for individuals to search for all their information on their own. Now what I do is I give instructions to my team of outsourcers, and I actually don't interface with the internet directly anymore at all. They kind of curate for me the search items that I need, And it's much better than if I had searched through, you know, I only have the patience to go through one or two Google pages, but they can go through through 50 of them across five, six people. And so it did take a little bit of retraining in the sense that it requires individuals to adopt almost an executive mindset and to imagine that, you know, you're really going to just give and deploy instructions to people, and then they will kind of fill in the details. And you have to be willing in the beginning to handle a little bit of an error rate. You know, in the beginning, my error rate was high, and I've gotten it down much lower. But it start. You have to be able to be to put up with that high error rate in the very beginning.
And the error rate is reduced because I assume that you have trained a team that now know you better, but also because there's going to be churn within that team, you've also enhanced your own processes, your own skills of transferring the requirements to the people. Is it kind of a combination?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. That's right. Yeah. Because, so,
I mean, we, you know, Outsource Accelerator, we advise businesses into outsourcing. We basically try and encourage every single business to, if not outsource, at least properly consider it. And I think businesses and especially entrepreneurs overlook the fact that actually there's a lot of kind of internal training, a lot of self-learning, a lot of kind of, you know, rethinking how you do things when you bring on an outsourced team. Yeah, and also, you know, not just outsource, but like delegation of tasks that people would normally do for themselves.
Yeah, the delegation is a mental mindset that needs to happen, and it is non-trivial, and I think that is. You know, that's why outsourcing is so interesting. It's got the supply and the demand side are both very interesting. And for me, the you know, my wife is an example. I mean, she you know, she likes to do everything herself, and I've built technologies and I have teams of people working for me, and I've gotten tried to get her to use some of it, and she won't do it because she, you know, she just wants that full control. But there's a high price to pay from that, having that 100% control, is that you can't really leverage your time effectively. And so that's what I'd like to encourage people to do.
Yeah, and then, I mean, because everything happens in cycles, doesn't it? Just in my sort of amateur hour observations, you know, things sort of go through cycles of centralization, now decentralization. And do you see that as a case with outsourcing, in that there's a bit of a trend now to, well, at the moment, as you say, everything is going on to the individual to book your own flights and, yeah, you know, book your own restaurants and maybe even eventually cook your own dinner in restaurants and things like that. But do you see that this is a trend? And, you know, you talk about Upwork a hell of a lot as sort of, you know, one of the leaders in this decentralized workforce. But there are now issues in terms of Upwork providing quality and standards and things like that, and people can have quite inefficient experiences on those platforms. So now there are higher care, higher touch platforms that offer the management kind of level, so it saves you time. Do you see that things can cycle and ebb and flow and go back and forth between the two extremes?
I do, yeah. But I strongly believe that the trend is going to be towards more outsourcing in the future rather than less. So they will have these short-term fluctuations, but I think we're at the tip of an enormous iceberg, and that iceberg is the number of people that are going to be coming online in the next decade or two, and the amount of huge amounts of productivity and human potential that will provide. It's just too much to leave sitting on the table, and so I believe companies will form that will, and software will be written, and programs will solve these problems of how to harness that human capital, and to really take advantage of all that potential. As a society, I'd like, you know, I do think we have to make some choices to try to encourage those developments to improve outsourcing, and I think that runs against the current conventional wisdom that robots are going to do everything and humans will have nothing to do. I don't think that's going to be true in the future. It's never really been true in the past, and we need to develop more technologies that really critically engage humans rather than just simply developing new machines.
And it's a skill shift as well, isn't it? Because, you managing your team shifts you from being Korok the economist to Korok the people manager, Korok the project manager. And actually
Right.
there's a whole new skill set, isn't there? And I've always been running my own companies for the last sort of 15, 20 years. And to be honest, I'm not the best people manager and I'm not the best project manager. And actually management is actually all about that as opposed to the actual execution of the task or necessarily kind of the intellectual contribution towards the exercise. Yeah. Even though I assume with you being academic, it is, it has to tilt towards you. I don't know, I suppose contributing the kernel of the original thought process. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a different skill. I mean, I've been able to shield myself a little bit by hiring very good people around me. And so, like in my center, I have a great program coordinator who manages our student staff as well as our online workers, and he's excellent. So it does require a little bit of a different skill set. But I do believe that technology can serve as a very, very effective way to help coordinate and play some of the manager and handle some of the managerial burden. The essay that I wrote on this topic is in this sense, it's very a little bit speculative but optimistic in that one of the best uses of technology in the future will be to develop better platforms and better methods of assigning and distributing work among a billion person network of people. Those are things that computers eventually will be able to do very well. It's just a matter of developing that technology.
Okay, that was Korok Ray. That was part one of my chat with Korok. If you want to get in touch with Korok, if you want to get his essay that he wrote, which is called Online Outsourcing and the Future of Work, then go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/187. And of course, if you want to get in touch with us at all, just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. Join us next time for part two. That is going to be episode 188. That's the next episode. So, of course, ensure that you join us for that to hear the rest of the conversation with Corinne.